Bicep curls, tricep extensions, skull crushers, Zottman curls. We use all these things to try to train our arms, but I don't think a lot of people realize the potential interference or assistance you can gain from those exercises.
True.
We'll talk about all of that and more on this episode of...
Welcome to Reconsider. I'm Bill Hartman. This is the podcast to challenge you to ask better questions, to look beyond traditional models of thinking, and arrive at better health and fitness solutions.
Every time I do that, Bill's going to start laughing. It's just Bill starting to laugh.
Arm training. Bill and I
on the network, we do these things with case studies with people. And right now, Bill and I are working through a client that is a former athlete, post left shoulder surgery, wants to get back into training, more bodybuilding, aesthetic focus. Mm-hmm. When it comes to people that want programs like that, a lot of those programs include some type of arm training, even if it's more for them because mm-hmm. they want that in their program. Right. And that started a conversation about how we can actually utilize arm training, not just from this perspective of trying to get a pump.
Yeah.
You can actually use arm training to move someone within their base of support, just like we use the lower body. So maybe talk about what the traditional perspective, given that you have a bodybuilding background for arm training, and then what sort of perspective you have on it now.
Well, it's usually just driven towards an aesthetic, an assumption that it will contribute to the aesthetic, right? Because everybody associates the appearance of a muscular arm with strength or attractiveness, whatever it may be. And so then the assumption that if I do this focal work, then that is going to, number one, improve my appearance. It's going to make me look more muscular. Not necessarily the case. I mean, at some point in time, it actually becomes beneficial. The initial aesthetic element is usually associated with more of the multi-joint middle propulsive type of exercises, like all of the pressing that you do, all the rowing that you do is infinitely more beneficial from a muscle mass and aesthetic standpoint than doing isolated elbow-related type of curls and triceps exercises, because the amount of overload that you can actually produce in the early phases of your training is actually slim to none, because you don't have the capacity to stabilize proximally to produce enough force to make the aesthetic changes peripherally. You'd be more benefited by direct arm work for the aesthetic several years into your training versus day one. Understood or not, they like to do it. And so we can use it to our advantage to actually solve problems that have arisen due to athletic backgrounds, living a life, previous training, whatever it may be.
I think that just an expectation there of what training should look and feel like. If someone has this idea of, I want better looking arms, I'm going to need to train my arms. And they have this traditional perspective of what arm training is. Bodybuilding approaches are always chasing time under tension, sets per muscle group over the course of a week. They're going to just do any exercise to target that muscle from whatever angle they want to try to approach it from, without any sort of consideration to the mechanics of early, middle, and late propulsion, and how an arm exercise on either side, either with a tricep extension, bicep curl, crossing the midline of the body, moving outside the midline of the body, away from the body, how that is actually going to affect. I think maybe it would be best to take the specific example of the person that we're working with who had a left shoulder issue, being pulled down into their right side.
Right.
It's being pushed forward on the left side. So we're going to try to utilize the ground and his pushing through the ground with his lower body in order to turn him. We are trying to add to that with the upper body, and the specific things that we were utilizing were triceps exercises from a hook lying position and then biceps exercises from a standing split position. So let's talk about that, trying to move someone from right to left and using the arm exercises as a way to help us do that.
Sure. Let's use the lower extremities as a frame of reference, and then we'll throw the upper extremity on top of it, which it'll now make more sense. So if your athlete is a narrow helical archetype, right?
Yes.
And you have a situation where we have the gradient effect of the top-down pressure that is that is sort of winning. We need to be able to push back up into that, which means we have to be able to apply downforce into the ground. So the way that we would typically look at that, we look at the ability to push the foot down into the ground and then push the ground away. So this would be a representation of late internal rotation pushing into the ground and then late external rotation pushing the ground away. So the center of gravity is now ahead of the ground contact. So we need to push the center of gravity up first, and then we can push the ground away, change direction. So it looks like coming out of the cut from the straight vertical and then pushing away. If I were to do a dumbbell curl with my right arm with this circumstance, I could literally turn myself accidentally in the wrong direction. So there's what you have to understand is when you have a weight in your hand, there's a displacement of your center of gravity associated with holding something in your hand. And then there's a movement that would be associated with it that could actually turn you as you're executing the activity. So I will give you a for instance. You're standing in front of the mirror with your tank top on because you got to show your arms when you're doing arm training. And you do a right side, like just plain old dumbbell curl. And so the tendency is for you to actually look down at your right side, or you're going to look in the mirror at your right side, okay, depending on circumstance, right? And you do that curl, and that's actually a right-hand turn. And that's actually going to turn you beyond the point at which you're going to push down into the ground, right? So if our goal is to have him push down into the ground and then push himself from right to left, you have just created a conflict, like a mechanical conflict in the ability to push down into the ground and move away from that ground contact, right? And so we can overcome that by altering the stance that you would use and then the position of the load, which would actually enhance our ability to push into the ground, push the ground away, and as we would say, come out of the cut on the right side. And merely by assuming a left foot forward staggered stance, like a wide staggered stance, and then dropping the load between the two ground contacts, we have now positioned the load such that he can still push the ground away.
Right.
Right. And so and we can maybe, I don't know if we're going to throw up a representation here, though.
We'll
put one up on the network.
What will be happening, anyone that's still with us, we're about 10 minutes in, you don't know about the UHP network, UHP.network. Bill is going to be posting an article this coming week about this specific case. We're going to actually have videos and visual representation of what we're talking about. So if you're listening to this, it's probably out there already, and you can go check that out. Head over there again, UHP.network for that.
Yeah. So once again, it's like, it's just a matter of a position of load, understanding the way that the center of gravity is going to move associated with that position. And then from the mechanical perspective as to how the internal and external rotation interacts to promote the appropriate direction. So that's the one thing that we got to be really careful of is, like, again, this is why we can't be random with anything that we're doing. If we're trying to produce a specific outcome, then remain coherent and understand these things allow us to just reinforce everything that you're already doing.
I think might be helpful to understand what you actually are doing and what the negative secondary consequences. So let's just say I grab a barbell and I'm just doing bilateral, both my feet planted into the ground, shrugging my shoulders, going up on my toes to try to eke out every possible dumbbell curl rep that I can. Yeah. What have I effectively done to my skeletal structure? What have I done to myself within my base of support that may actually be negative?
Sure. Okay. So let's be really specific. Barbell, like a barbell curl. So fixed
straight
hand position.
Straight barbell.
Straight bar barbell curl. Okay. So by fixing your hands to a singular implement like this, you have step one, you have eliminated turns. Okay. Now, if you don't give a rat's patootie about being able to turn, change directions, aren't concerned about maintaining any semblance of relative motion in your joints, perfectly fine. a great way to increase the overload on the musculature in and of itself, because this is a high force, relatively speaking. It's like the exercise itself is not the most high force of exercise, but in that category of exercises, it would be a high force exercise. So if you're to the point in your training where reducing the complexity of an activity to emphasize a certain area to make it grow more, then this is actually a really good choice, because it takes the turns out. So it takes away relative motions. Relative motion reduces force production. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it would reduce the overload on musculature. Okay. Now, to increase the force output, I have to have a proximal high pressure strategy, which means I'm going to squeeze myself front to back. Right. Number one, to stop turning. Number two, increase a high pressure strategy so I can increase the amount of load that I'm actually lifting in this barbell curl. Right. So the consequences are I would reduce relative motions. Could be good. Could be bad. Depends on your goal. I would increase overload on the muscles. Could be good. Could be bad. Depends on your goal. But I will definitely be squeezing. I will definitely be creating a strategy that increases the pressure downward, which could be detrimental if I want to run fast and jump high, right? So there's good things. Again, it's all a matter of perspective and your intentions.
Right. So in our specific case, we have left shoulder injury, so limited in their ability to raise the arm up overhead. So my traditional arm training exercises are going to have this person in a more opened the place where they have space to work. So yes, in that range of a bicep curl or like a tricep extension on the ground, that is the space that they actually have access to, versus traditional shoulder rehab might have him just pressing very light dumbbells overhead, completely forsaking the space that's actually available to them.
That's available. Yeah. It's like, cause the protocol says at this point, like we're this many weeks post, I should be doing this.
Right.
Versus actually addressing what the needs might be in that circumstance.
Yeah. And if you listen to the previous episode about shoulder mobility and the previous episode before that about hip mobility, we know that we're creating a position to push from into the ground that gets air and the guts and space to go upwards.
Upward. Yes.
Yes. And this would be further. And traditionally speaking, if I was to just do arm training on top of that, it could be potentially interfering because I'm just going to drive the stuff back downward by what Bill was just saying with that barbell example.
Yes.
So now let's use the more specific exercises in our case, because I think we can get lost in the weeds otherwise. Yeah.
Okay, so we actually just talked about a single arm staggered stance dumbbell curl with the load inside the base of support. Okay.
Right.
And again, that allows us to actually move us from right to left. If I was going to use a so-called tricep exercise that would be complementary to that, and we'll talk about your guy again, is this would be a hook lying activity. And again, this is isolative, right, as far as its movement is concerned. But imagine doing like straightening the elbow, right, but with the shoulder internally rotated. So it would be like we could call it a cross-faced triceps extension, which, again, I think people would understand that by gym vernacular, right? That would actually produce the same outcome as the staggered stance, one-arm dumbbell curl that we described.
Right.
Because the resultant behavior associated with the position of the load and then the action of the extremity would again push us from right to left.
So yeah, that would be laying on your back, feet flat on the ground. My hand, I have a dumbbell in my hand. My hand is facing my face.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going across my body.
Yes.
And extending. So
correct.
If anyone's watching this, they can see me doing that. And like I said, we will be posting these up on UHP.network. So you'll be able to read that article there. So I guess for people following along might not understand what you just said or get why a biceps exercise and a triceps exercise can accomplish the same act of turning me or pushing me from right to left.
Yes.
Could you try to maybe equate those activities to lower body activities that would do similar thing, maybe to try to use it as an analogy device?
So if you were to perform a step up with your right foot and follow through into, say, a sprinter's acceleration position, so like a sprinter step up kind of a thing, where you're actually pushing, like you step up onto the box and you keep pushing to bring the left knee up, right? Into, right. Like I said, it'll look like acceleration. That produces the late propulsive representation through the hip, which actually moves you forward and to the left, okay? And so the two activities that we just described by position of the load and then the muscle activity in the joint position actually reproduce the exact same mechanical element, right? And so we're connecting the axial skeleton and the lower extremity to the ground, but driving the load through the upper extremity. So, but again, the same behaviors will take place, because we have to consider that we're moving the pelvis. If our foot's in contact with the ground and we were just doing a lower extremity exercise, we're moving the pelvis relative to our ground contact. We're creating a ground contact with the entire body. And when we're talking about this hook laying arm activity, so those are the same ground contacts that we would talk about with your foot. Now, it doesn't look like a foot, but there is coherence within those ground contacts. And then there would be coherence as far as, again, the position of the load and the muscle action would actually move the center of gravity away from the right side.
Right,
it's literally a byproduct of the position of load. Let me give you another example that has nothing to do with arm training per se, but will maybe enlighten. If you did a right-handed suitcase carry, there's a displacement of your center of gravity to the left, away from that side. Assuming that the load doesn't pull you over, it's so heavy it pulls you over to the right. Your natural response to that load would be to move away from the right side towards the left side. So that's a shift of your center of gravity just purely associated with the position of load. We're doing the exact same thing. We're doing the exact same thing with the position of the curl, and we're doing the exact same thing with the position and muscle activity of the arm and hook line.
Okay. So we're moving things from right to left, and then mm-hmm. we can actually do things. So in many cases, and this one that we're talking about with this athlete of mine, that we're mm-hmm. training, in many cases, that might be all they need to do is mm-hmm. doing the right sided stuff to move them from right to left. Yeah. But if you have a personal training client, you have someone that has these expectations of doing exercises right. on both sides, you can offer them left sided things that could also yeah. be useful. So yes. What would I want to do when it comes to left sided arm training in this case that we're talking about? And what wouldn't I want to do?
Okay. So number one, we don't want a mirror image of the activity that we just did on the right side, right? So the reason that people need to do right-sided and left-sided things because they're afraid that they're going to have this one gargantuan arm on one side and then a skinny arm on the other side, and they won't match, right? Because everybody wants to, again, the aesthetic is symmetry. So in this circumstance, though, if we set up the exact same exercises going the other way, we actually kick them back into a potential strategy that becomes interference. We actually turn them in the wrong direction, and we're taking them outside of the base of support where compensatory strategies lie. And especially in this situation that we're talking about here, we got a guy that's coming off of surgery. Well, so there's a reason he had the surgery in the first place. So he probably had all these compensatory strategies in play, and we certainly don't want to reinforce them. And we know based on his physical structure as to how he would move his center of gravity within his base of support. And so we want to reinforce that. And so where our right-sided curling activity was a wide left foot forward staggered stance in this circumstance on the left side. So he stays inside of his base of support and actually moves in a favorable direction. So again, he's narrow helical archetype. So when we get him over to the left side with our right sided activities, we want to move his center of gravity back on the left side. And we can do that by performing a right foot forward short staggered stance. But this time we're going to drop the load in front of the left side, which actually moves the center of gravity back in the direction that we want them to go. So once again, we're using the load as displacement to move him in the direction, a favorable direction, that will actually reinforce his control over center of gravity and maintain his range of motion.
So when they were doing on the right side, when the left foot was forward, there, the bicep curl was happening more off to the side of the body in order to shift the weight to the left.
Well, technically, yes, but because it's a wide stagger, it's a wide stagger. It's a side to side stagger with the left foot forward.
So it's
this is actually more of a front. So if I put my hands up like this, there's a left foot, there's a right foot stagger. Yeah. The weight's right between.
Sure.
Okay. Okay. So now what we're doing is, and for those of you who are listening, I'm actually holding up my hands and demonstration so you can see this would be a right foot forward, left foot back stagger. There's a difference. This is a wide left foot forward and this is a narrow right foot forward stagger.
Well, you've changed the circle for center of gravity, center of masses on the ground.
Yes.
By changing the foot position.
Without question. Without question. Yes. I am trying to get somebody to move in a very specific direction. And I can use that with the natural displacement that takes place associated with adding load to the system. It's like you will respond to it in a certain behavior. And so, you know, if you're a PNF aficionado, this is just like any other leading resistance. I am going to behave associated with where I am applying the load.
So we're pushing them from right to left, and then we're doing activities that retain their ability to stay on the left side.
1000%.
Okay.
Like the right foot forward stagger stops them from going back to where they came from.
Yes.
The load displacement moves the center of mass back towards the left side, which is what I wanted in the first place.
Okay. So there's our split stance example. Let's go back to the hook line. For the hook line, we had a cross face sort of tricep extension, skull crusher, whatever you want to call it. Uh-huh. We're going to do a similar but not mirrored activity. So if we were working before, we were working on pushing right to left and then staying back on the left. Now we're pushing right to left. How do we stay back on the left with the hook line triceps?
So instead of going cross face, you drop the load next to the left ear, if that makes sense. So the elbow is pointing towards the ceiling and then, and you bring the load towards the left ear. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Because the end position of that activity is what pushes you straight back on the left side, just for the record. So you understand.
It would be like pushing my leg to cut off of my leg. I'm pushing my arm to, I'm cutting back to the left off of my left hand, basically.
If you would think about pushing straight down into the ground versus coming out of a cut.
Yeah.
That would be the difference. Like marching backwards.
Okay.
With the left foot. If you were marching, when the left foot's on the ground, marching backwards, that would be the same position that we're using in the triceps activity.
So we basically did a side shuffle into a backwards like march. Basically, we actually sidestepped to a retro step.
Yes.
And now we're sidestepping with the upper body into a retro step with the upper body.
Do you want to write a whole program? We could write the whole program off of the arm exercises if we wanted to.
Well, yeah, because they are the same as on the field they're doing a box drill where they do right sided shuffles to a left back pedal. We're accomplishing the same movement within the center of gravity.
We're doing right to left sled drags and we're doing left backward step twos on the sled. Right,
which we will be talking about in the next podcast episode.
We're doing chopping variations with the cables that produce the same outcomes. It's like everything remains coherent in the program.
So there's your example. We're talking about a lot of the same things. We're talking about moving the people within their base of support. We're talking about restoring vertical dimension by creating down forces that get stuff to go up. And then we're talking about movement from side to side and influencing that and not interfering by doing just random arm training.
Correct.
Using the same principles and concepts from what we're talking about with the lower body to the upper body to how we do our exercises. And then like I mentioned briefly there, next time we're going to talk about sled drags and using sleds.
Yeah.
If you like this stuff and you've been watching this stuff and you're not a part of the network, I suggest getting on there because it's free. So that's UHP.network, a lot of free articles, free courses to learn some more about this stuff. If you have any suggestions about stuff you want us to talk about, leave it in the YouTube comments. I think Spotify has a comment section now. You can post the stuff in there too. That will help with engagement and the almighty algorithm seeing that people are interacting with our stuff. And if you watch this podcast and you like it, just tell, and you work at a gym or a PT clinic, just tell your colleagues, like let them, you know, experience some of this stuff too. What should we talk about? Oh, I was just randomly popped into my head, like the toys. Cause I got a son, a 3-year-old son. So I'm thinking about like the toys from my childhood. Uh-huh. What do you remember? Like did you have like pogo sticks and moon boots and like stuff like that?
Gosh.
Like what were the more dynamic vehicle type of things that you like? Did you have a red wagon? Did you have a
big
scooter?
Big
wheel. Yeah.
Big wheel.
So low seat, huge wheel, pedals are directly on the wheel.
Yes.
Was it the plastic one?
1,000%.
Yeah, yeah. 1,000%. And if you got it going too fast on the gravel, it wouldn't pick up any like friction.
It would
spin
just
out. Spin out.
And the commercial always had there was a brake. There was actually a brake on the side. And they would show these kids doing these cool spin outs, virtually impossible to do. It's like they must have hired like an 8-year-old stunt person to pull this off. Because number one, so the pedals attached to the front wheel like a tricycle.
Yeah.
Right. And so to skid and slide, you have to actually take your feet off the pedals. But the problem is the pedals are still spinning. And so it turned into like the worst shin bruise of all time.
Oh, because I remember trying
to do this. It was just impossible to do.
Oh, the worst was, you know those little like the dollies that they used to give you in gym class.
I love those.
I can
run
still,
over your fingers.
I can still feel. That's what I was going to say. I can still feel my finger pain from running them over.
Yes.
So it was always like the gym was super dusty. So I would just, my nose would be burning because I had allergies, just constantly burning. Yeah. My eyes would be running from all the dust from the gym floor. And then my fingertips would just be like bloody and burning. But kids don't get to experience that now.
I was gonna say it's like that. That's why they're a bunch of wimps.
Yeah, we got the we had big wheels. We also had, I forget what they're called. They had a couple different names. It was called like but you would snake the thing back and forth so the seat and the handles would turn, and you could like get it going. I forgot what it was called.
Oh.
Someone will remember. It was like a triangular seat with handles where you put your feet on the footrest.
It's like a pumping action kind of a
thing. If you remember what that thing was called in the comments, post it down there. But yeah, that was a big one. And we had moon boots where like you strapped them to your shoes and you could jump.
Oh yeah. Full of the air.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But and then like trampolines and stuff. But yeah, big wheel. We definitely had some big wheels.
Big wheels.
All right.
Worst toy of all time. Sit and spin.
Oh yeah.
Sit and spin.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does slip and slide fall into this category?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Okay. I was going to say slip and slide with a slight backyard hill. Awesome. And then the big wheel, those would be my two.
Yeah. I don't know. Do they still sell those after? I know there was a lot of, so
there should be a helmet. There should probably be a helmet that comes with it.
No,
and then
we
a
had,
brace.
So the biggest thing, we had a couple incidents when I was growing up of kids getting like puncture wounds because people didn't pick up
sticks
in their backyard, or worse, like glass bottles or like,
God. Where did you grow up? My God,
you hit that because you're sliding and that thing is not, it's like this thin vinyl or whatever. Yeah. Right. So you get a stick like in your, I think one of the kids in my town actually punctured his rib, punctured his lung through his rib cage. Yeah. That's brutal.
Ouch.
But yeah. Okay. Anyways,
there
not to
go.
Leave, not
That's
to leave on that. On that morbid note, but yeah. All right. We'll see you next time.